Welcome to episode 250 of the Family Podcast Network. Is money really the root of all evil?
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something that we can do to take our parenting to that next level. The date today is September the 23rd, 2014. Our topic for today is going to be money lies, teaching the philosophy of money. That's right. Today we're going to get pretty deep into not necessarily like how to teach kids techniques for handling money. I mean, that's one thing. You guys are going to figure that out as you do as a family. What I'm talking about is the philosophy of money. How do you see money? What do you see money as? What are the positives and negatives that you attribute to it? One or both? Or anyway, it's going to be really interesting today, guys. Normally, session notes are maybe 2 pages, 3 pages long. These are like about 6 or 7 because this is going to get, but I'm telling you guys, don't let that dissuade you. This is going to be one of the most fantastic shows that I think we've had in a long time. So hang tight with us, guys. Before we get into all that, let's get into our housekeeping. If you want to get notified of all the new episodes that come out on the Family Podcast Network, just hover over to thefamilypodcast.com over the right-hand side, entering your name and your email address. When you do that, you'll be put on a list to make sure that you get updated of all the new updates that are coming out, new stuff that's going on, any of the new shows that were going out, what we talked about. Guys, also don't forget, so to go over to Facebook and like us over there. We have a page over there that's extraordinarily active. Lots of discussion, lots of fun that we talk about. And you can connect with me. You can connect with many of the other members out here that think a lot like you, if not exactly like you, when it comes to parenting kids, school, and all that other good jazz. Come check in with us, connect with us. And we want to make sure that we honor that with you guys. Don't forget, there's also a blog, thefamilypodcastnetwork.com/blog. My wife writes that. She has been on an endeavor of her own to start her own web business over the last few days, and she has been hot in what she's doing. I mean, she's putting tons of time and effort into building that up, so she just hadn't quite as much time to knock out Facebook blogs, but you got to go check out the ones that are there. I'm telling you, they're funny, they're informational, they're educational, and they come directly from the frontline lady on who puts the stuff that we talk about here into practice. Guys, don't forget, you can always support the show, 30 cents per episode. I want to say thank you to all of you guys who have recently stepped up to become members of the PTAC, or Parents for the Ethical Treatment of Adolescents and Kids, our funny twist on how we support the show here. But I want to say thank you to y'all. I've seen y'all. I pay attention to y'all. And I sure do appreciate those who step up and say, crap, we love what Trey's doing so much. We want to see this get supported with our own money. We're willing to help make that happen. It's simple, cheap, and it's easy to do. Go do that, guys. You also get access to exclusive content made only to you guys as members. Go check that out. Last, if you guys have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, a show topic that you want to hear on this show, simple and easy ways that you can do that, you can email me at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can also go to the right-hand side of thefamilypodcast.com where it says ask Trey a question. Click on that. You can leave a voicemail just so you're doing it over a phone. You can also call us on your cell phone, 661-PARENT-0. You will not get me on the line saying, hey, this is Trey, you're on the show. You're going to get an automated voicemail system that you can leave a message. We'll see about popping it up there for you. You guys can always connect with me over at Facebook. If you want to send me any instant messages or anything like that, you can touch base with me. We've made a metric butt ton of ways for you guys to be able to connect. So with all of that out of the way, like, wow, Trey, that was a lot of intro that you did really fast. That's right. We have a long show today, and I want to try to honor your time today by not, you know, making this a 10-hour show. I am not entirely for sure that I won't have to break this up into multiple shows yet. I'm going to try to keep it into one. I think we can get through it quick enough to honor the time without making it too much and boring. I think this is going to be a really hot topic. I am going to anticipate that a few of you guys I'm going to piss off. I mean, I think today the approach that we take with money, although ultimately it comes down to the belief systems of you got to teach your kids what you believe. That's the ultimate goal we're going to get to today. The reality is I have some very, very specific belief systems on money and how I think that we should be handling and believing and seeing money as what we're talking about. So today, again, the emphasis of today is going to be what is the philosophy of money? What is the understanding of what money is? So I want to warn you guys again. This is not about money management techniques. I'm not going to talk to you guys today about how do we teach our kids how to balance checkbooks. Very important. I'm not going to talk to you guys about how you reconcile a credit card. Very important. I'm not going to talk to you guys about Ramsey principles or any of those things, which I love Dave Ramsey stuff. I think his principles are fantastic, and his Entree Leadership podcast is one of the top five podcasts that I listen to weekly. But although all of those things are good, that is not what we are talking about today. We're going to be talking about the philosophy. How do you view money? If you had to try to describe money to somebody who had never heard of it before and how you see it, what would you tell them? What would you think about it? How would you say it is? How would you explain it to them? And that's what we're going to talk about today. And this was sparked from actually a couple of conversations that happened this last week. One of them, the primary one, was actually a couple that are getting ready to have kiddos. And we started talking about this money, and it led into a long conversation that got me to thinking, wow, this, I don't think they understand money very healthily. And I'm not dogging on this couple. I'm not saying they're doing anything bad. I think they're wonderful people. But it made me wonder. And then it got solidified by another conversation that I had later that week with another couple that they don't actually have kids. But it really solidified this belief system in my mind that I think that folks do not have a healthy understanding and appreciation of what money is. Some have seen it as their free ticket to life and happiness. If I just had tons of money, then I would be a happy, happy person. I would be able to have tons and tons of it, and I would be happier and happier. If that was true, we would not see so many people in Hollywood on drugs. Successful, wildly successful people making a metric butt ton of money that are smoking dope. They're shooting up. I mean, we would not see that. We would not see divorces cracking up in the middle of Hollywood if money made us happy exclusively. But then that's flipped with another flip side of that, the other opposite end of the extreme, and lots of stuff in between as well. But the other side of that, too, is that money is the devil. If you have money, it's the devil, and you need to treat it like it's the devil and get it out of here, right? I mean, we see it as that, where some people, I think, are terrified of success. The idea of having money in their bank is terrifying to them, and they don't like it. So I think that we've got very opposite in dichotomous of the spectrum, polarized belief systems about what money is that are unhealthy, and we're passing them along to our kids. See, I frequently help folks who want to start a web business, get them off the ground. And a lot of times when we do that, sometimes folks pay me, but in most cases we do like exchanges or we barter, stuff and services and those kinds of things. And it's been a wonderful experience. So what we'll do is we'll sit down and we'll talk about what they want to do. We talk about business ideas. We try to look to see if there's a viable option in the market to be able to put that business idea into effect. And we get creative with it on how can we sell, how can we meet the market where they need to be, all that other stuff. It may sound a little dry, but it's really heavy stuff. But we try to figure out how do we take passions of people and begin to put it into their lives and make money off of it. And so I was talking with a couple not too long ago about their business that they wanted to start together. And we were looking at their hobbies. We were looking at their passions, the things that they love to do, things that they just choose to do because they like them. And I noticed that as I began to talk with them, they became very funny about the idea of monetizing a passion. And they kept saying things like, I don't want money to ruin my passion. They kept saying stuff like, I'm afraid that money will take over and it will affect my love for what I'm doing. Now, I'll be honest. When retrospectively thinking about this meeting, I think that what they meant was they had a fear of the financial piece of this and their business, and making money off of their hobby would cause the hobby to actually lose its therapeutic element and its relaxation element, right? So they were concerned that if money started coming in, they would have to worry about balancing checkbooks and doing all this other stuff and how much they were going to sell this for, that it would be so much of a drag that it would cause the hobby to lose its what it does for them, the relaxation piece. Now, I want to make sure that I get it. I can understand that concern that, if money gets mixed in here with my hobby, that it's going to screw everything up. I get it. However, I also say I believe that is a load of bullcrap. I call a BS flag on this. Because I'll be honest with you guys. FPN. FPN once was a hobby site. Can you believe that? FPN once was a hobby site called letstalkaboutparenting.wordpress.com. True story. I tried the blogging scene first. I hate blogging. I don't like typing. I don't like putting text down. I like to speak. I'm a man who I love to use my words. I'm an auditory man. I've always loved speaking. public speaking, no problem for me. It doesn't mean I don't get nervous as crap, but I can fall into line with public speaking, just and I'm just in the, I'm in the zone, and it's smooth as butter. I love to talk. So monetizing my original passion of talking with parents about parenting through a blog did nothing but make, not only was it more fun, I started to enjoy my passion more. When I began to do what I was doing and I loved it, and people actually began to want to spend money on it, I have never felt more fulfilled in my life. And I have never been able to take what I initially designed to do under a blog, turn it into a site that actually can make money. I've never brought more value to people than I have now. I've never worked harder to bring the best shows that I could, or the best ideas, or the best whatever. I've never worked harder than I've worked now to create value for the people that listen. So this mentality, first off, I want to defeat this mentality. If you try to mix together a hobby with money, it's going to screw everything up. It's bullcrap. It can do it if your heart's not set in the right place. I get that. But it's a bullcrap. It's a bullcrap statement. But that conversation that I just described there, when it was combined with the previous conversation that I meant that I had had earlier, it had me suspect that too many of us have a bad philosophy on money. Now, I want to be clear today before I start this show up. I haven't done any kind of in-depth study on money or money philosophies. I'm not an economist or any of that kind of stuff. But I'm just going to talk about some of the most common philosophies on what money is and how it works and what its purpose is in this world. I'm going to knock off some of the most common ones that I see. So this is not an exhaustive list. Understand, I'm walking into this saying it's not an exhaustive list. So if you think of another one, yeah, I agree, there's probably more. But some of the common philosophies that I see in this show. Number one, money is inherently evil. It's evil. It's dastardly. It sets things up. It creates impurity in the heart of man. It messes us up as it incites greed, the natural desire for greed that we have in our heart. And it's what instigates all of these things. The other one that I see is that money is a necessary evil. This one, up until recently, I believe was the most common in America, is that money is a necessary evil. We hate the fact that we have to go to jobs to get money, but we really need the money. And so to keep our lights on and keep food in the refrigerator or whatever else. And so it's just kind of a necessary evil. So we got to do what we got to do to get the money that we want. Sure, if we can get a job, maybe we get a good deal of payment off of that, that's fine. But fundamentally, it's just a necessary evil. The next one that I see is that money is to be shared. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but especially like in socialist and communist mentalities, that money is like something that is to be distributed equally amongst everybody. Regardless of whether you work hard for it or not, regardless of any other things, if there is somebody who's sick and needs that money, you take it from somebody who needs it and you give it to the poor, right? It's the classic Robin Hood. Next off, money is to be hoarded. These are the folks that they say, hey, money is all mine. It's all mine to do with as I please, and you save up as much as you can for that rainy day. You save up as much as you can. You work as hard as you can to get as much of it built up as you possibly can because it is the ultimate thing of success. It's the only thing that defines who you are. You are as important as how much money you have. You are as powerful as how much money you have. The next one I see is that money is intrinsically neutral. That money is intrinsically a neutral product, that it is the idea of what you do with it that either makes it good or bad, positive or negative. And the last one that I could think of when I was putting these show notes together is that money is preeminently good. That it goes without saying money is a good thing. And having it is good, using it is good, trading with it is good, whatever it is. It's a positive thing. So you'll see kind of the spectrum that I threw across here. Now, again, I know some of you are like, well, Trey, what about? Yeah, I agree. Again, this is not an exhaustive list, but let's just talk about those for today. Now, if we're honest with ourselves, I have seen America starting to take a swing from the necessary evil. Again, that's the mentality that says that money is a necessary evil. We've got to have it because we've got to pay the bills, all the other stuff. You know, having too much of it can be kind of a good thing. Having a lot of it typically is corrupt. You become corrupted. And so I've seen kind of that general mentality moving away from the necessary evil to the inherently evil. If you have a lot of money, then it is obvious that these things were a problem. I mean, did y'all ever notice that during like the Occupy movement, what were they saying? They were protesting against big banks, big bankers, and big business. And they were saying that these companies that have become so big have become evil. They said the companies are evil. We'll talk more about that here in a little bit, but I disagree with that, at least not in the sense that they mean it, not without being a lot more specific. But so if we're moving from this necessary evil and we're moving into the inherently evil category, why are we doing that? Here's why. Let's be honest. Many have abused their money. They've abused the money that they have. They've used it to create over themselves a power over other people. Madoff, that big Madoff, that Ponzi scheme that Madoff did. I mean, let's be honest, that dude is freaking brilliant what he came up with, but he used what he had and he abused people. The Whitewater controversy with the Clintons. If you really want to get, if you want to have some fun, I did some research on major institutional scams and things like that that have happened in the United States. Man, go read up on the Civil War profiteering scheme. Just a fascinating set of stories. I mean, all this crap that we're seeing nowadays, we have this tendency to believe that we're some kind of like special generation where this stuff has never happened. I'm a firm believer of nothing is new under the sun. This stuff has been happening from the time that humans began. People have been swindling money out of people. It doesn't matter whether you're doing United States American dollar or if you're using, you know, a Greek currency from hundreds of years ago, denarii or whatever. People have been doing this crap for years. You got to check out the Teapot Dome. That's another fascinating story right there. The 1980s savings and loan fiasco, that was fascinating. How about the recent investors that right there during the housing boom, if anybody remembers that a few years ago, the housing boom that hit, all of a sudden everybody was able to buy a house, right? Don't you remember that? And the government set it up to where anybody could do the house, and they adjusted the interest rates so that way they regulated the interest rates so people would buy houses. So what did the crooks do? They came in, they bought a bank, and they started giving loans. They took out loans that were 100% likely to default. We're talking people that were making $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 a year were given the ability to buy homes that were $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 homes. This is 100% likely to default through a set of stuff that I'm just barely qualified to even be able to answer. Things happened. The market crashed. And people that had been allowed to pay on just their interest up until this point all of a sudden had their balloon payment due. So many of them lost their jobs and couldn't pay on their house. Well, guess what these loan sharks did? They loaned out to these people that were 100% likely to default. What did they do? They insured them. They insured the loans. So when they crashed the loans, guess what happened? They got paid out individually for every single one of them. They cashed in. Why have people begun to move to this mentality that money is a necessary evil to them, money is an inherently evil? We've given lots of reasons to believe as such. And so a lot of people use this mentality to solidify in their minds the belief that the money made them do it. I hope that piqued some of y'all's red flags. Oh, my God. I hope some of you guys nearly shot out of your chairs or nearly flipped out of your car or nearly dropped the item, whatever you're using at your home right now. I hope to God that made you flip out. The money made them do it. If they'd have just had less money, then they would have been more honest. Does anybody else think that is an asinine thing to say? If they just had less money, then they wouldn't have gotten corrupt. That's horse crap. There are plenty of people that make $0 that are just as corrupt in their hearts as anybody else. But it's so much easier to blame the money rather than the management. Why do I think we like to do that? Number one, it's easy to try to cast blame on people and just say, oh, well, you know, obviously this money is a bad thing. I think it really is an issue of just we like to blame money because as long as we're not having to blame money, it's nothing else. But second off, I don't think we like to acknowledge the fact that really in the reality, it has nothing to do with with the money the person has. It has everything to do with the heart of that person. You got a person who's got a corrupted heart. And I'm not talking about just like, you know, I don't know, for me, for some reason, like corrupt, I get this vision of like the military in Africa. And I'm not trying to dog on military in Africa. The only reason I remember that is because the last thing that I saw before I left Africa was this man roll up with this dolly that looked like stacked up boxes filled full of like little Girl Scout cookies in it. And he walked up and you had to give your plane ticket to an armed military man before you could even walk into the airport. And I remember that he walked up, this guy that had all these boxes of God knows what's in there, he walked up to him and he shook his hand And I watched this huge chunk of dollars pass in between this man's house. Didn't have to see a ticket. That man walked right in the door. So that's what comes to my mind. And I'm not necessarily talking about something like that. I mean, of course, that all comes from the same place. Yes, I am talking about that as well. But I'm talking about the corrupted heart. The heart that has chosen to believe that money is the most important thing out of all. And I think in our fear, our reactive fear to keep away from this idea that we get to a point where we say money is the most important out of things out of all, we've moved ourselves way too far on the other end of that spectrum. I don't want to do anything to make money or have a profit, because a profit is a bad thing. That means you don't care about the people in your organization or any of that kind of stuff. If you're making a profit, that's a bad thing. We've built up the idea of the almighty nonprofit organization. I have no problems with nonprofit. I work for a nonprofit organization as a Christian institution that teaches higher education. I work there and I love that place. But we've built this mentality up. You know, it's especially bad in ministers. You ever see a minister driving a BMW or a Mercedes? What do you think? He must be robbing from his people. Don't get me wrong. Again, are there those people that have backed that up? Are there the Christian versions of Madoff? I'm sure. But we've used that to vilify not the heart of the man, but the heart of money. And I think we're all predisposed to do this. Again, thinking back to the Occupy movement, with the big banks, you know, the big banks that actually touted too big to fail, when all of that became popular, what did they say? Well, the companies are all evil. These companies are evil. You know, that's bull. Companies cannot be evil. A company is a lifeless thing. It is an entity that is not a person, a human with emotions or feelings or greed. But they absolutely can't be mismanaged. You can have somebody with a corrupt heart handling money. So, I say all of this, and let me just summarize it this way. I reject from the ground up this money is evil notion. I believe firmly that money is inherently neutral. It is a neutral item. It does not have positive or negative associated. It is not ascribed with good and or bad. It's a lot like food, for instance. Food is neither a good or a bad thing. It is inherently a neutral thing. Now, you can take a good thing like food, and you can turn it into a bad thing. I'm in the middle of the biggest amount of restructuring of my eating that I have ever, ever done. For those of you guys who are Survival Podcast listeners, I've started eating very paleo, and I'm loving it. But the reality is I had to change everything. I had to cut my portions in almost half. My wife says we're doing like she's saying I'm doing about a third of what I was doing before. But I've had to cut all that out. I've cut out all my sugars. I've cut all my breads and all that other stuff. I've cut out cakes. I've cut out almost 99% of all sodas. I mean, I've drastically gone to town on this stuff. But let me tell you, for me, food was a very negative thing. I was using it to engorge myself. I was in the morbidly obese category. And I'm the closest from downgrading to obese overweight than I've ever been before. Boom, baby! Some of you guys are like, whoopee-doo, Trey. For me, that's a big deal. But food is inherently neutral, but I was using it very negatively. I was not using it as a fuel source with some entertainment. I mean, don't get me wrong, food is entertaining. I was not using it as the fuel source. I was using it as the pleasure. And you see what happens there? Do you see that dichotomous twist there? It is not inherently evil. But it can be used in bad ways. And money is the same kind of thing. Oxycodone is not a bad thing. It's neutral. But you better believe there are a lot of people that are addicted to oxy. You see, that's the issue of it all. And I tell you what, you know, all of you guys who are longtime listeners to this, you guys will recognize this. You'll recognize this idea. What makes money bad or good? What makes it bad? It's all about the motive. We talk about that all the time. I have parents frequently that'll call and say, Trey, I did this. Is this okay? You know what my answer typically is? I don't know. What was your motive? Why were you doing that? What was the thought that was going through your head as you said that? Because that can make all of the difference. It's all about the motive. You see, money is not evil. It is what you do with it that makes it good and evil. And if we're not careful, our kids grow up with this mentality that this money is evil, you shouldn't make money. And I think what that does is nothing but encourage them to get mediocre, low-paying blue-collar, maybe some white-collar jobs. It keeps them from being able to expand themselves and grow. You know, the beautiful thing about my business growing and making more money is that now I hire more people to do more things. I'm already supporting things by making money in this business, which this is by far from making profit. But it's getting close. I've actually built a business that is very low cost, and I'm getting close. I would be willing to bet that I am five people away, five P-tackers away from it being completely self-sustaining. Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Anyway, I digress. Money is not inherently evil. So I know some of you guys out there, we have a very large Christian following here, and I've never made it a secret here at Family Podcast Network that I'm a believer in the Christian Bible. And so I know some of you guys are going to quote, well, Trey, but doesn't the Bible say that the money is root of all evils? No, it does not. Oh, some of you guys out there are like, that blasphemer. No, hang tight with me, guys. It's not actually what it says. Y'all are talking about 1 Timothy 6:10. Those that will throw that out there as the kind of the support that, you know, money is bad and God thinks it's bad. 1 Timothy 6:10 says that the love of money is the root of many evils. Now, I want you guys to hear me say, I'm not trying to purport myself as a theologian here. I'm not a theologian. I don't have a master's in divinity. I don't even want one. Besides, who wants to get a master's in making candy anyway? I just kid. If any of you guys out there have a master's in divinity, I have a high respect for him. My father has one. I have a high respect for him. Don't take that inappropriately, but I'm not a theologian, guys, so I want to be very clear on that. But I do read Greek and Hebrew. Not fluently. Don't hear that like, oh my God, Trey reads fluently. No. I mean, like, I can take a dictionary and follow along, like a Greek dictionary and a Hebrew dictionary. But the word love that's used in this 1 Timothy verse is actually the Greek word philargyria, which means basically avarice. So, okay, let's define avarice. This is the English word avarice. Avarice means extreme greed for wealth or material gain. The love for extreme greed for wealth or material gain, the love of it, is the root of all evils. It didn't even say that greed or wealth or material gain is that. It's when you love it. So let's break down this concept of love. You can't really understand this until you know what you believe about love. I am amazed at how long it took for me to finally wisen up and understand what I believe love was. And I'm even more blown away at how so many people, sometimes into their 70s, 80s, and 90s year old, have no idea their concept of love. They can barely describe it. And often when they do, it's incomplete and it's confusing. It doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. So most of you guys, many of you guys out there are longtime listeners, and you kind of know what my perspectives and belief systems on love is. So I believe that love is not actually a feeling. Now, some of you out there, some of you ladies out there just gasp, and you're ready to slap me across the face. But I mean, seriously, you ask an old couple if they still feel those exact same feelings that they had in those first few months when they fell in love, right? If you ask them, do you still feel those same feelings? What do they typically say? They say, no, of course they don't. So the question then is, does that mean that they don't love each other? No, of course that's not what it means. I think the emotional component, whenever you first get together in anything, that emotional component is absolutely necessary. You need to be all oogly googly eyes for your spouse. It's a big part of y'all falling into that attraction for each other. It is, however, not the love. How does Trey define love? I define love as that choice. What choice, Trey? That choice. Whatever it is. That choice that you make to do the right thing in a relationship. And that's not just your spouse. It can be anything. From your boss, to the people that work for you, to your kids. That is the nature of love, doing the right thing, even when you don't want to. It's that choice that you make to be the first person to apologize. I've learned that in my household, I've got to be that person. And let me tell you, sometimes I do it biting my flipping tongue. And my wife and I get into a little spitty spat, and I'm angry, and I'm frustrated, and I don't want to go first. But love goes first in those situations. was a popular song by Toby Mac, one of my favorite songs about it. But the chorus of the song goes, "Love just gives a little more." And that's such a beautiful conceptualization of love. Love is that choice that you make to be kind whenever you're angry. Love is that choice to go ahead and go outside and play with the kids, even though I would much rather come in and decompress, take a crash out on that couch. Love is that choice that even whenever I'd rather come back in there and start making my dinner that evening after I've put the kids in bed, I go ahead and sit down with them and I watch a show with them. You see what I'm saying? Love is always that choice that you make to do the right thing in your relationships. So, if love isn't just the feeling, right? If we're talking about the idea that love isn't just that feeling that we get about it. And let's be honest, when it comes down to it, like any other feeling, whenever you have something new happen in your life, you experience kind of that exciting feeling, that thrill. I mean, you guys remember back whenever you were meeting people and dating or your spouse when they first came along, that feeling that you get, that thrill of something new, it's exciting. It feels good. And that can be much like what it is like with making money. You get a thrill out of it when you first get money. I remember the very first person who signed up on my website and became a PTACker. They not only donated a pretty good chunk of money, then they also became a PTACker. And I remember that thrill. And I still, when I wake up in the morning and I pop my phone open and I drag it open and I see that you just received $5 from X person, I still get a little bit of a high from it. There's nothing like someone loving and being just as passionate about what you're doing so much that they say, "I'm going to pay you because I support you." It is thrilling. And many come to resent this fact because in their mind they're interpreting the love of money. If you're getting that thrill from making money, that is the root to many evils. And a lot of people even secretly reject this feeling. But what if we went ahead and took that construct, that belief that love is actually the choice, and we applied it here? The love of money doesn't just become that feeling we might get, that high we might get. It becomes the choice that we make to choose money over whatever else. I would go ahead and venture too far to go ahead and plug that word love in completely and say anytime that we choose money over relationships excessively. Now, don't get me wrong. We have to make that choice over money sometimes. No, I do not, Trey. I do not. Now, maybe many of you stay-at-home moms don't, but I bet your husbands do. That choice that we do to get up and go to work at a job is making that choice. Now, is that a necessity? Absolutely. Are we loving our kids? Are we making that choice to provide for them if we're not going to get our job so that way we can keep the electricity on, so that way we can pay for the food and the clothes on their back and all that other stuff, the shelter that they live under? Of course we have to do those things. Those kinds of things are choices. But maybe you make the choice to work a job that's like 60 plus hours and it keeps you gone all the time and you're gone almost 12 hours a day and you never get to see them, and maybe by the time you leave before your kids are out of bed and you get home before they're back in bed. If you make that choice to work a job, maybe it makes you tons and tons and tons of money. But you work that job that keeps you busy all the time. Then I would say that is the root to many evil. The choice that you make to make money over time with your kids. Again, sometimes it happens. But when it consistently burns relationship, that choice to work late or even to take that call that happens right during the middle of dinner that could have waited. You know, we've been watching a show, and I'm not recommending this show as like a wonderful, wholesome family show. I'm not even going to go as far to even support it necessarily. Now, my wife and I are watching it. You can take anything that I just said at its worth. But we've been watching a show called The Riches, a very fascinating show about a set of drifters or travelers is what they call themselves. But in reality, most people in America probably would call them gypsies. And these, I'm sorry guys, I'm taking a sip of my tea here. But these folks that are these riches, these family, actually the Malloys, they through kind of a series of events that I'll let you guys to discover if y'all want to watch the show, but they wind up kind of stealing the American dream from this family that winds up kind of dying in a freak accident that they didn't really have anything to do with. They wind up kind of assuming their lives and moving into their home and taking their lives and then just kind of lying their way through everything. But at the start of the movie, regardless of the fact that they're obviously pathological lying here. I mean, it's nuts how much they lie, but you know, even through that, you can tell in the way they portray the family in the movie that they're very, very loving and kind and involved in each other. The parents respect and trust the kids in a way that I think is the right way to do. They involve the kids in major decisions and have them be a part of the planning process. And it's just a wonderful epitome of what I think healthy relationships look like with kids and family, you know, kids and parents. But as the show begins to happen and they get plugged into this American dream and the dad begins to work more and more as a lawyer at this one major real estate firm, they begin to have a disconnect. And there comes a point like in one state where the daughter of the show is trying to get dad's attention because some major things have been happening and she's, you know, dad, pay attention, pay attention, dad, pay attention, I'm trying to get your attention here. And it comes down to that point to where, like, she's about to crack this huge piece of information and his phone rings. And he looks at her with those eyes of desperation, like, I've got to take this. And she's like, Dad, no, not now. And he gets up and he leaves. The choice. He was at that moment choosing to protect the money that they were making, the life that they were living, over the relationship with his daughter. The love, the choice that we make for money, for extreme amounts of wealth, that we're willing to lay on the line our most important relationships, is the root of many evils. Or at least, that's how I choose to define this. You know, in reality, I think for those of you guys out there that are endorsed the Christian Bible, I actually think the Bible speaks quite differently about money. Take the story about the three men that were given the talents. The story goes, for those of you who may not be familiar, that there were three different men, and he was going to go on a big business trip. The owner of the household was going to go on a big business trip. So he pulled up his three most trusted slaves at the time, and he said, I'm going to give you guys a certain amount. So to one of them, he gave 5 talents, which is basically just a unit of measurement. We'll talk again in just a minute about how much that is, but he gave 1 5 talents. I think he gave 1 2 talents, and he gave 1 1 talent. If I remember correctly, I'm pulling this off my head, right top of my head right now. But he gave him those amounts. Now, the first one who was given 5, it's the story goes that he took those 5 talents and he invested them, basically. He traded with them is what one of the translations comes out as, that he traded with them. And he made 5 more so that when the master came back, he said, look, I took your 5, I made 10, here you go. Good job. I'm going to put you in charge of a lot of crap now, is what the master said. The next one who had 2 said, look, I took the 2 and I invested them and I came back with 2 more. He goes, wow, that's a fantastic job. He said, good job. Now you're going to be in charge of a bunch of crap. But the last one he gave 1 to took that and he buried it. And then when the master got back, he brought it to him. Now, there's a lot of stuff that this guy says in there. And I'm going to let you guys go read this on your own. But he basically took the 1 and he said, you know, I knew you were a hard man. So I took it and I buried it. And then now that you're here, you can have it back. And the master's really upset. He's like, dude, you could have at least put it in a bank and made interest off of it, but you hid it and you gave it back, and then you called me a hard man. Really? He said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take this around and give it to the man with 10. Now, I've had some people that I personally think that they are quite ludicrous, and they'll say statements like, oh, well, I think it's quite interesting that it translates into the American word talents. And then they'll go into this big, long rigmarole about how God really meant that it was about investing your personal talents. Bullcrap! It was spoken in Greek at the time. It didn't mean America. He wasn't sitting there saying, I'm going to say this so that way one day people understand in America that in the English language I meant talents, as in your personal capabilities and what you know. That's bull. He meant the money. So how much was a talent? I think a lot of people get this idea of like a coin. They get this idea that it's like they got 5 coins or something like that. No. Now, this unit of measurement has changed over time, but in Israel, typically a talent, if you did it in gold, was 200 pounds. 200 pounds. If you take the current spot price of silver right now and you take 200 pounds of gold, which it's not going to be the same, guys. We have an inflated economy. We have a federal government that is printing out metric butt tons of money and is devaluing the dollar. They have not backed it with any kind of hard currency of gold. They're just printing paper and then saying it's valuable. So these aren't going to align here in terms of like quantifiably how similar they were. But a talent of gold at 200 pounds would be $4,237,472 at the current spot price of gold. But maybe it was in silver. Another popular currency at the time was silver. If it was silver, one talent of silver was 100 pounds. That would be, at current spot price of silver right now, $34,912. This was not a few coins. This was a significant amount of investment that he gave these three slaves to run how they wanted to run it. And they flipped it. It would be the equivalent of these numbers right here. If it was in gold, of making $8 million for him. If it was in silver, $68,000 in silver. Look how I flipped this for you. So what do I think this Bible says about how we handle money? I see that God is actually rewarding and blessing profitability. Now, you have to temper that under the fire and the hammer of you never do it out of love of money. You never are profitable out of the love of money. You're never profitable under the sole promise of I'm going to make more money no matter what expense of what relationships it comes at. This Madoff guy was brilliant. Made a ton of money out of that. But he burnt the relationship with the people, his investors that were trusting him with their dollars. I think God rewards and blesses profitability. I think, let's just, for those of you guys who maybe aren't necessarily Christian-based, I think I think profitability is a good thing. We all say that we want, you know, benevolence to people. We always want to help the poor. We want to have money to give to them and donate to this charity and all that stuff. You can't do that if you're poor. For you to be giving, there has to be money there. Again, you got to temper it under the hammer of, are you losing your relationships because of it? But if the answer is no, if you're still fulfilling your relationships, you're doing it right. It's why I believe in entrepreneurship. It's why I'm trying to get myself out from underneath the idea of a full-time job. Because I want to put myself into a position where I can accentuate the things that I'm naturally talented and excellently gifted at and turn it into a money-making, profit-building business so that way I can come home and be with my family more and further strengthen those relationships. It's the entire purpose of the Family Podcast Network. Outside of the fact that I want to get this incredible and amazing, excellent material, and I'm not saying that because I built it, guys, I always have felt like I'm a man standing on the shoulders of giants. I've put this stuff together out of the best stuff that I can find and assembled it in a way that I think makes the most sense for the most people. So that's not a self-lifting statement there. But it is the entire purpose of that. It's about increasing my relationships. But the reality is this, we must teach our kids whatever our philosophy is on money. You may not agree with me at all. You may not think that I'm right at all. You say, no, Trey, money is evil. That's okay, but teach it to your kids. Let them know what you believe. Think about why you believe it. If they said, I believe that money is evil, why? Why do you think money is evil? Have a good reason for that. Listen to their questions and answer it. You must teach your kids about the philosophy of money. It is vital. Or else, if you're like me, you grow up vilifying money. You're terrified of it. We must teach our kids the philosophy of money so that way they can grow up and believe the truth rather than the idea that money is corrupt. We need them rather to believe that money is not the money that corrupts you, it's the heart. It's the heart of avarice, like we talked about earlier. It's the heart of sacrificing relationship for the Benjamins. I chose to teach my kids a few things about money. I choose to teach my kids that money has the power of both good and bad. It is what you do with that money that makes it right or wrong. I teach my kids that money can be lucrative And if you're not careful, you can choose or love, depending on how you want to define it. You can choose or love money. And that it is the beginning of many things that they do not want to get into. I teach my kids that money can also be beneficial to the other people. That it can grow people. That it can save lives. And that it can be a powerful tool that builds things rather than destroys. But the only time money can have that power is when we're not afraid of it. Well, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. I really want to encourage you guys to take some time this week and be thinking, how am I going to teach my kids about what I believe about money? I want to encourage you, if I said something today that pissed you off, good. I want you to be thinking. I want you to be knowing what you believe about money and how it stands, not just conjecture that you've been taught by a church or a family member or whatever else. Know what you believe about it because you've put it to the test. And understand it and teach that to your kids. And you might set them up to actually be in a position where they can be profitable, where they can invest the five and come out with 10, and then help bless and benefit other people as well. Well, guys, I sure do enjoy having you guys here. As always, don't forget, this Wednesday coming up in our next show, we got Real Family Guys Friday, Real Family Guys Podcast this Friday. We'll see you guys later in the week.